from a space cowboy. Bet you weren't ready for that. I'm a space cowboy. I'm sure you know where it's at. Yeah, 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 yeah.
News Talk 1120 KMOX. I'm Paul Harris. Let me introduce you to Sandy Magnus, who was born and raised in Belleville, Illinois. Went to Central Junior High School, then went on to the University of Missouri at Rolla, where she earned degrees in physics and electrical engineering, and then went on to get her doctorate in materials science at Georgia Institute of Technology back in 1996. And from there, she was spacebound. She became an astronaut and actually went up on the space shuttle in 2002 as a mission specialist, spending almost 11 days in space. And now she is set for her return to space. Come June of this year, she will start a long trip, weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, because she's going up to the International Space Station. I'm happy to welcome her to the Paul Harris Show this afternoon on KMOX. Hi, Sandy. How are you?
Hello, Paul. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. That's quite a resume. At what point in that lifetime I just described did you turn to your parents and say, I want to be an astronaut?
Yeah, it was sometime around junior high school, I think, was when I caught the bug. It just stuck with me.
What was it that made you say, this is what I want to do?
You know, it's funny, they asked me that question during the interview process down here, and I can't really think, and I could not really think of a moment. Just the whole idea of flying in space and being on the edge of technology and exploring, it just seemed like a really fun thing to go do, and I'm very lucky to be able to get to do it.
Well, I'm very jealous because I'm a lifelong space race fan. I was one of those kids who grew up during the Mercury years and thought, oh, I would love to be an astronaut. I've never had the right stuff. You've obviously got it, though.
Well, I think there's a lot of people with the right stuff. You know, when I applied, there was, I don't know, about 2,000 people who had applied, and there's a certain amount of luck at some point of being able to, you know, get into the office and do the job. But we have a lot of people with the right stuff around the country.
Well, here's the interesting question, though. I mentioned that you applied to be an astronaut after you got your doctorate at Georgia Institute of Technology, and that was in 1996. You didn't go up into space until 2002, and you haven't been back since. For most people, when they hear astronaut, they think, oh, they're going up all the time, they're flying all the time, they're going to the edge of space or into space or whatever it is. But that's not the case, and you're living proof of that. Why is it that in, you know, more than a decade, you've had exactly one trip?
Well, we have a lot of people in the office who are waiting in line to fly. When we assign crews, you don't want to assign all new people. You want to have some experience mixes. And, you know, we had a little bit of a downtime with the shuttles as well. So you put all those factors together, and you do have to, you know, sort of pace yourself. And, of course, with long-duration training, like I'm going through right now in preparation for my space station flight, I've been training since July of 2005 for this, so it's a very long training flow and just takes some time to get through all of the material that you need to know in order to go up there and live for a few months.
Yeah, you're going to be up there for almost 4 months, right?
Yeah, you know, the schedules are always changing. For example, I found out recently that probably instead of June, I'll end up going in October.
Oh.
And it'll be, you know, sometime between 2 and 4 months, depending upon what the shuttle schedule finally settles out to be. So you have to be flexible.
I guess you would have to be. How do you train to spend weeks or even months in weightlessness?
Well, you know, the big thing that we have to learn is about how the space station operates. You know, there's a section that's run by the U.S., there's a section that's run by the Russians. When I'm there, there's going to be a Japanese laboratory module up there and a European laboratory module up there. And then also there'll be Canadian robot arms. And so I have to visit these different countries and learn about their systems. We have to learn about all of the science experiments we're going to be doing. Of course, I'm learning the Russian language. There's all kinds of things that we have to learn to prepare for space station. It's like being in college again, actually.
But I would think that the weightlessness aspect of it is the most daunting part of life day in and day out. Am I wrong?
I don't know if I'd call it daunting, but, you know, it's certainly something you can't train for because you know, there's no place on Earth to train for it. But your first flight, it's amazing how adaptable you get to operating in zero G and just relaxing and letting your body kind of float with the feelings and things like that.
Oh, with people in the astronaut office making noise. Hey,
yeah, I know. I've hang on just a second.
Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead.
We need some discipline on this crew, Sandy, for goodness sake.
It's one of my crewmates' birthdays today, so everyone's coming and going and getting cake. We do a lot of, family-type celebrations here with people's birthdays and stuff like that.
Speaking of that, do you get to choose the food that you get to take up to the ISS?
You know, that's a good question, because it turns out that food is one of the more challenging things for morale. We have a set menu. It's half Russian, half U.S., and we're soon to have some European and Japanese food involved. Every 20 days, you get the same things for your meals, but you get to take up an optional bonus package, if you will. So one food container every month. You can pick the food that you want, as long as it doesn't need refrigeration or it's not in glass containers and things like this. And that's what a lot of people do to add variety to their diet.
So could toasted ravioli be your choice?
Sure, if it's in a plastic container and it doesn't need to be refrigerated after I eat it. But, you know, things like chocolate. I'm planning on taking a lot of different olive oil and different flavors of mustard and things like this to change the flavor of the food that we'll have up there, so I can sort of add some variety.
Is there such a thing as cooking in space?
Well, I'm going to try. You know, we have tortillas are sort of a staple of our diet up there, and you can do a lot of things with tortillas. You can make, hamburgers out of the meatloaf. You can take some of the casseroles and put it in the tortilla and add some condiments and add different flavors that way. So it's sort of a pseudo-cooking, if you will.
It's News Talk 1120 KMOX. Paul Harris talking with astronaut Sandra Magnus from Belleville, Illinois, who's going up to the International Space Station later this year. Spent a couple of months up there. You've actually worked on some of the ground components that have been sent up to the ISS already, right?
Yeah, I was very fortunate. One of my ground jobs, which is what we do while we're waiting to train and fly in space, was working with the Russians to get some of their modules ready to fly into space. So I got to spend a lot of time in Russia early on, and it really helped me with my language skills and my knowledge of the Russian systems.
And the things that you worked on that got sent up there, are they part of what will eventually be a space platform? I don't even know. Most Americans don't even know. What are we doing with the International Space Station?
Well, we're actually, it's quite a flexible outpost. Of course, we're pushing the edge of technology first and foremost, and we're doing the types of experiments we've long been able to do on the shuttle, but now we can do them for longer periods of time and learn even more about the environment and how to invent new materials. We do things with respect to protein crystals, which are objects involved in drug design and understanding how to build better drugs from that way. Of course, I'm a human guinea pig, as all astronauts are, and they do a lot of experiments to understand what happens to human beings in space.
Now, wait a second. Let's explore this for a second. What are they going to be doing to you? What's the guinea pig aspect of your role?
Well, they have a lot of scientists come in who want to do experiments. They've gone through a peer review process, and they brief us on the types of experiments they want to do. And for example, I signed up for one that studies your immune system. Your immune system, it turns out, gets depressed while you're in space, and so it's something that we're trying to understand, how the immune system functions. And so I signed up to contribute in that area. Another experiment that's been ongoing for a while is to understand why calcium leaches from your bones, and this, of course, is what goes on in the osteoporosis that people have here on Earth even, and so we're trying to understand that phenomenon, so I'm participating in that study as well. There's another study that's more targeted towards long-duration flight, when we go to the Moon or Mars. It turns out that there's some nutritional changes, how your body absorbs and doesn't take in certain kinds of vitamins and minerals, and we're trying to understand that so we can design better food and diets for the Moon and the Mars, and so I'm participating in a study like that. And there's a lot of people who study pre- and post-flight changes, too.
Are these things that are being done under the auspices of NASA and the U.S. government, or are they under contract to, like, pharmaceutical firms and others here on Earth?
No, this is all government. The government puts out calls for proposals. Hey, we have these opportunities. Please provide some proposals of what you'd like to study for people on space. And there's a whole peer review process. All the proposals come in, and the people in those fields review the proposals, and they come to a consensus of what the most valuable ones are, and then those are provided to NASA. So there could be universities or study groups anywhere that provides proposals for these experiments.
Interesting. But I want to go back to what I was asking you about before. Are we also, in addition to the experiments we're doing on the inside of the space station, are we continuing to build an infrastructure in space that we're going to use for continuing human exploration of space?
As a matter of fact, we are, and on the shuttle mission, which is carrying me to station in October, we're going to be taking some habitation equipment, some water regeneration equipment, some food preparation equipment, some oxygen regeneration equipment, these kinds of things that we're going to be testing out the technology of in order to prepare for making similar kinds of equipment for the Moon and Mars, because, of course, it becomes even more challenging when you're in an environment so far away and they really do have to be self-contained. So we're using the space station as a technology demonstration bed in order to try some of these new ideas and see if they're feasible or not.
As a fan of the space program my entire life, it has been upsetting to me that we have not been back to the lunar surface in nearly 36 years now. Are we going back sometime in the next decade or so?
Yes, we are. As a matter of fact, there's a very large group of people working right now on the next generation rockets that will take us to the moon, and they're being designed with the, the shuttles are going to be retired in 2010, and this new vehicle will be able to carry astronauts to the space station, and we will also carry astronauts to the moon, where we'll be able to start building lunar bases there and use that then as the stepping stone to go onto Mars. And these vehicles are being designed with that growth in mind as well. So you should see some of that activity in the next few years as far as launching and test firing rockets and things like that.
Very cool. It's News Talk.
Yeah, it is.
News Talk 1120 KMOX. Paul Harris talking with astronaut Sandra Magnus, who's from Belleville and now in Houston, where she's preparing to go up to the International Space Station later this year. What do you think of these private companies like, the thing that Bert Rutan has put together with Spaceship One and others who are talking about space tourism?
Well, I think that's actually an excellent sign. The government's job in an area like space research, for example, is to push the boundary of what humans can do. It's our job to do the hard things and develop the technology and then make it possible for the private industries to come in behind us and fill up that space that we've created. And I think you're seeing that now with all these private companies who are taking an interest in space. They're able to now start capitalizing on what the government's done for these last 50 years. And that does allow us to, for example, quit concentrating as much in low Earth orbit and then move to the moon and to the next, because that's the next boundary, is getting people out of low Earth orbit and actually establishing a base on the moon. So now that private industry is starting to take over some of this low Earth orbit work, the government can do its job further and to continue the breaking of the new boundary. So I think it's an excellent sign of where the space business is going.
Me too. And I can't wait for us to get past that 250,000 mile mark to get to the moon plus 1 foot.
The Earth is so beautiful when you're in orbit looking down at it close up. It looks it's so peaceful and serene and fragile and beautiful. I can't even imagine what it would look like from the moon as a big blue ball in the sky.
You missed being up there, didn't you?
Yeah, it was really nice. It's funny. My first impression when I looked out the window of the shuttle as we were doing our work right after Mangin cutoff was looking down at the Earth and seeing how fragile it was, how beautiful it was, and how thin our atmosphere really is. I know that intellectually, but to see it, this tiny shell of air around our planet, you realize how very special it is.
You'll be up there with a couple of cosmonauts?
I will be there with a cosmonaut and a fellow American astronaut.
So it's three of you on the space station at the same time?
That's correct.
Is there a lot of room?
Yes. I'll have a whole lot of room.
So you can actually have privacy on the International Space Station?
Yes, it's amazing. Actually, even when I was there before, it was smaller, of course. And even then, with 10 people up there, you could be in a module all by yourself and not even know that there was anybody else on the station if they were off in other places. So it's even going to be more like that with three of us on board with extra modules.
I guess this is a question I should wait a year to ask you until after you get back, but what is there to do up there for recreation?
Well, there's a big difference between a station mission and a shuttle mission. And a station, because you're there for months at a time, you do get some time off on the weekend. We typically volunteer some time on Saturdays to do educational projects or science experiments or maintenance. And then Sunday we have the whole day off. Of course, you exercise a lot because it's required in order to be in shape to come back home. But different people have taken up different projects. One crew member took about 60,000 photos of the Earth. That was his hobby. Other people have there's a keyboard up there and a guitar. You can play music. Other people have watched movies. Other people have, you know, I'm sure you've heard about Sunny Williams running her marathon. So there's all kinds of different hobbies. You can, some people do their own little sorts of basic science experiments just to kind of play with the environment a little bit, that are a little bit simplistic compared to what some of the peer-reviewed sciences. So there's a lot of different things to do with
your... Or you could take a couple of external hard drives, load them up with movies, and just sit down and say, don't bother me, I'm in here watching the entire box set of whatever.
You know, I don't think I'll be doing that, because the best movie of all is just looking out the window and watching the Earth go by, and I don't think it's possible to get tired of that.
That doesn't get old, you don't think?
No, I don't think so.
How about the tiles problem on the shuttle? Have we fixed that?
Yeah, they have, you know, as you know, we worked that very hard after the Columbia incident, and they have several different techniques for fixing tiles or fixing some of the reinforced carbon-carbon leading edges if we would ever get into such a situation. We have a very extensive robotic survey of the orbiter after launch, and then again right before reentry, to verify that we don't have any areas that we need to go back and maybe try some of these repair techniques with. So we're in pretty good shape there, I think.
The last time you went up in 2002 as a mission specialist, you spent 10 days and 19 hours in space. This will be 2, 3, 4 months, depending on what the shuttle program is like. What do you think you're going to miss?
You know, after my first mission, which, as you mentioned, was only a week and a half or so, I was missing milk. I love milk and fresh vegetables and fruits. I really wanted a salad and a glass of milk when I get home. So I'm pretty sure I'm gonna want that again. But the other thing that was really noticeable is just the color green. You know, the trees, the grass, out of doors. I was really noticing that when I got back, and just the smell of the earth. I think that I will be missing those at some level subconsciously.
That's very interesting. There's no green on the space station. You know, you need to get that. What was that Bruce Dern movie? Silent Running. I think it was called, he had like all the trees from Earth and he was carrying them around on a spaceship through space. Can't we get some botanists up there as mission specialists?
Well, we do occasionally have. I remember when I was up there before, they happened to have a soybean experiment running. And so there were some, you know, they were growing soybeans and harvesting them and examining if the seeds that harvested in space can grow again. And that was a very popular experiment, because people would just peer in and look at the soybean plants from time to time and just really appreciate the living plants. And when we establish a base on the moon, we're clearly going to have some hydroponics there as well. So people are working on it, but we're not at the point where we can have a forest up there with us, unfortunately, which I would love.
Well, I can imagine you want to see some green.
Yeah.
I'm very excited for you, Sandy, and I hope that when you do get up there, since you'll be up for a while, maybe we can hook up some sort of thing through NASA where we can catch you live from space and maybe include some phone calls from listeners or students at a school here or something like that. Do you think that's possible?
I think so. We'll have to look into it. I know they have a process by which people can apply to do some PO events, so we can definitely check into that. I think that would be a lot of fun.
That'd be fantastic. Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time today.
And I'm sorry for the interruption earlier with the cake eaters here.
That's all right. I hope whoever it is having a very happy birthday.
She is, very much.
Astronaut Sandra Magnus from Belleville to space here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.